Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamualaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Hey, 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 welcome. My name is Jet Li, and you are tuned into Reading with Your Kids. We're coming to you from Reedville, the loveliest neighborhood in all of Boston. Our mission is to help all families grow closer through reading. And we do that by introducing you to the coolest authors, the funnest tales, and a whole lot of reading inspiration for the entire family. We really hope that you'll help spread the word by telling all of your family and friends, your kids' teachers, librarians, principals, and random strangers you meet in the street, all about reading with your kids and letting them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM/FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, YouTube, CastBox, Player FM. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. With that being said, let's get this reading party started. Our first guest today is John Claude Bemis. He is here to celebrate his middle grade graphic novel, Rodeo Hawkins and the Daughters of Mayhem. Later in the show, we'll be meeting Goldie Modafsky. She's here to celebrate Bubblegum Shoes, the case of the contraband closet. Hey, my friends, I have a super idea you are going to love. How about this weekend, turn your backyard cookout into a storybook celebration? Fire up the grill, crack open a few of your favorite picture books, and serve up Big Fork Brand's legendary bacon sausage. Made with nitrate-free bacon and premium pork, it's juicy, smoky, and unforgettable. Top it off with Big Fork spicy Chicago fire sauce, and you've got a meal as bold as the characters in your favorite bedtime tale. Get 20% off your order using the promo code READ at BigForkBrands.com. That's BigForkBrands.com. Promo code READ to get 20% off, because nothing brings families together like great food, great books, and a whole lot of flavor. Big Fork Brands. Read, grill, repeat. I always know I'm going to have fun in an interview when me and the guests have just been chatting like 10 minutes before we hit record. Our guest today is here to celebrate his new middle grade graphic novel. It's called Rodeo Hawkins and the Daughters of Mayhem. Please welcome to the show, John Claude Bemis. John, how are you?
Hey, great, Jen. I'm so glad to be with you. And I said this before, but I'm going to say it again. Before we got on the air, but I just love your podcast and I love your mission, getting kids to read. So thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll be totally transparent with you. When I started the podcast, the goal wasn't just to get kids to read. My goal was to get parents to read with them. Because I know that my really good relationship with my now adult kids was built on that foundation of reading.
Yes.
And it was through, so that's what I was going for. I've been blown away over the past 8 years learning how many benefits kids get when we read with them and when kids read on their own. It's literally the best investment you can make.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. I was a classroom teacher, an elementary school teacher, and I'm a parent who just dropped my daughter off at college for her first year just this past weekend. But, you know, I've seen how important reading to your own kid, but reading to other kids has been. So.
Well, congratulations on dropping your daughter off to school. Listeners, he has a kid in college. You need to buy his book because he got bills to pay.
Yeah. Please, people. Yeah. Help me out.
So tell us a little bit about Rodeo Hawkins and the Daughters of Mayhem. I love this title.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's funny. It's been a fun title and a fun book to work on. So, yes, this is a graphic novel, and I wrote it. Nicole Miles, who's extraordinary, she illustrated the book. And the story, the main character is not Rodeo Hawkins, in fact. It's this kid named Sidney Poblocki. And for Sidney, he's kind of unloved. He's unwanted. And on the night that the story opens, he's decided he's going to run away with his best friend, Walt. But when they meet up in the dark streets that night, Walt's had a change of heart. He can't do it. I mean, he's got a loving family. He can't, you know, it's just crazy running away from home. So he can't do it. So poor Sidney is on his own. But what he quickly discovers is that he's not completely unwanted, because there are two very powerful factions who have been searching for Sidney Poblocki, and they are about to arrive in his neighborhood. Yes. And one of them is the Paladins, who are these four legendary warriors who protect the cosmos. And they have been searching for every kid named Sidney Poblocki through all the different various Earths in the multiverse. And so they are a powerful force. But the other group that is coming for Sidney on this same night is Rodeo Hawkins and the Daughters of Mayhem, who are these misfit scoundrel girls who generally travel around the multiverse stirring up mischief and mayhem and causing pranks. But they've actually been investigating this mystery. They've been pulled into the mystery, trying to figure out, why are the Paladins, these powerful warriors and guardians, looking for these seemingly ordinary kids who happen to all be named Sidney Poblocki? So poor Sidney, our main character, he is pulled into all sorts of danger. He has no idea what's going on. He has no idea who to trust. But, you know, he's got a lot of mayhem ahead, I guess. So a lot of fun trouble for the reader, at least. So.
Well, that's awesome. And I understand that this is the first book in a series, so it sounds like a perfect character for an ongoing series.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Rodeo Hawkins and the Sons of Disaster will be out next year. So.
Sons of Disaster. I love it. Are we sure that you haven't been the leader of a motorcycle club? Because
Yeah, I've never even been on a motorcycle, but you know, this is why you become a writer, because you can vicariously live through these characters who do way more exciting things than we do. So,
now this is your debut middle grade graphic novel, but it's not right. Your debut publication. How different was it writing a graphic novel?
Yeah, it is a whole different beast in a lot of ways, and you know what was interesting was I didn't begin at thinking that this was going to be a graphic novel. I thought it was just going to be, I had these ideas for the story, and but they were coming so fast and furious. You know, sometimes I'm very slow and methodical about thinking through a story before I write a first draft, but this one, the ideas were just really coming, and I knew I needed to capture it quickly. So I just thought, you know what, I'll try something a little different. As a creative person, I like to experiment and try new things. And I thought, I'm going to try to just get a quick, bare-bones version of the story just to get these ideas out of my head. And I think the quickest way to write it would be almost like a screenplay. Like it's just, you know, where we just have the dialogue and then some stage direction, some setting description. But I don't have all that kind of narration that would be part of writing a novel. But then once I finished, you know, I realized like, oh, you know, this is very visual and it is very dialogue heavy. So It seems like it might work really nicely as a graphic novel. And I took it to my agent and he said, well, how about we just do a little A-B comparison? How about, will you rewrite the first chapter as a novel? Which was kind of my intent anyway. I thought that I was going to turn the script into a novel in revisions. And when I did, it was okay. It could have worked, but we both kind of agreed like, nah, this feels really fun as a graphic novel. And So writing that script was really fun, but certainly part of it, you know, knowing that I was going to be working with an illustrator. I will confess though that I like to draw, and I did have at the very beginning, I did think, wonder if I can illustrate this book too. And I showed some sketches to my agent, and he said, sure, I'll shop it around like that and we'll see what happens. And, when Margaret Ferguson was my editor at Holiday House, when she got a hold of it, she loved the story, wanted to do it. She said, we'll find an illustrator. Don't worry. But you know what? That was probably the best thing that could have happened. I mean, I, I love to draw, but it's a whole different skill set to do the kind of illustration work involved in a graphic, 250 page plus graphic novel of all where, if this was Marvel or DC or one of those, comic books like that, they have whole teams who work on the illustration part, the penciler, the sketcher, the inker, all that kind of stuff, the colorist. But in the children's book world, the kind of expectation is that one person does all of that. And I was lucky with Nicole. She did an extraordinary job.
Yeah. And, I've been talking, had an interview last night with an author, illustrator of a middle grade graphic novel. Mm. These, graphic novels for this older group of kids, you're talking 1,000 to 1,500 different illustrations.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot of work.
It's a whole lot of work. It is a whole lot of work, and in the revision process, I'm used to revisions on a novel where we're just dealing with just wordsmithing or rewriting scenes. But when you start to redo an entire scene in a graphic novel and the illustrator's already working on sketches and it becomes a whole different kind of reconfiguring the layout and that kind of thing. So it gets very complicated very quickly.
I get. Yeah. Yeah. Now I know in the picture book universe, there's usually that wall between the illustrator and the author. Is it the same in the graphic novel world?
I didn't have that experience, and I thought it would be because I have a lot of friends who are picture book writers but are not illustrators. And I'd always heard those stories about how, the publisher wants to keep the illustrator and the author at arm's length. I mean, I kind of understand where they're coming from on that, because for a lot of us as writers, we don't have that quite that same visual artistic, and you need the professionals to be making those choices. But so I was surprised and pleasantly surprised that my editor wanted it to be very collaborative. I was included in, all that kind of like, as we were looking through the sketches, as we were working on final art. And a lot of it too is, I think, just having more eyeballs on it, because like you said, there's so many panels. Mm-hmm. And with a picture book, if it's 32 pages, and even if there's multiple illustrations, some vignettes, it might be more than that, but it's not nearly the size of a graphic novel. And we needed a lot of eyeballs on it. It's a little bit like a movie where you kind of need continuity editors just to say, hold it, back on page 16, they were drinking, a soda, but now on page, whatever later, it's a milkshake. Oh, whoops, we gotta get that fixed. And so,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Again, this has been fascinating. When I first learned about that wall between illustrator and author, it really came to be real for me when I had an illustrator and author on the show together, and I looked up and the author was crying because it was the first time she had had any contact with the illustrator, and she just loved it so much, and it just moved her. Yeah. And boy. And also talked again to a woman who took her existing middle grade novel that had been a big hit years ago, and they turned it into a graphic novel. And she was saying how, I had to write like a script. I had to start thinking screenplay as opposed to a novel.
Yeah. And what's interesting with that is I'm good buddies with Alan Gratz, who, has done, all these great middle grade novels like Allied and Refugee, and he does a lot. But Refugee is getting turned into a graphic novel. And so and it's coming out in October, I think. But he and I had been talking about our process for it. And we had very different approaches to writing the script for it. He was very much of that, it sounded like, of that kind of mindset of wanting to kind of lay out each page. Like, this, we're going to have like six panels on this page and, that kind of thing. Whereas I left it very loose. I wanted to I felt like Nicole had, the illustrator probably had the best sense for the design of the book and the layout of it. So in turning in that original script, I had no idea what the page count would be for it. And I guess neither did my editor. So that was kind of part of the process of, once you know, the sketches got turned in by Nicole. She really got to have some of that, you know, control, more control over kind of like what the visual layout of the story would look like. And
But
styles, you know, we all have different styles to it. No right or wrong.
So I know you mentioned that the second book in the series is coming out next year. How are you right now? Is it, do you love graphic novels so much? It's like, oh, I just want to write graphic novels from now on. Or is it like, I might want to do a YA romantasy at some point.
Yeah. Well, it probably won't be a YA romantasy. That's not quite my skill set or wheelhouse. But I still love the, you know, writing a traditional novel and still working on those kind of pieces. But the graphic novel thing has been just a fun new approach. And one of the biggest differences I've discovered, and I found that it's helped my novel writing, in fact, is that you don't quite have as much interiority for the character in a graphic novel. In other words, you don't get to go into their head quite, you know, if you're reading a book, a traditional novel, you know, that we can have the action, we can describe the scene, the setting, we can describe what the characters are doing, and then you can also slip into that character's head. And it really presents, I think, a unique opportunity for us as people when we read books, that it's really the only opportunity we have to know what someone else is thinking, which I think is a real power of reading fiction, to give kids and readers that opportunity to see what someone else is thinking and feeling on the inside. But with the graphic novel, it's having to figure out, how do I take what that character is probably thinking and feeling and present it in a way where I don't get to tell directly what they're thinking, you know, that it has to be shown. It has to be come through more in inference in that the reader has to kind of, you know, figure it out based on their actions or what they're saying. Or, and that was a big role of Nicole's as well in the illustration work, is trying to present that.
Yeah. You know, that sense of interiority, I think that's how you said it. The first time I really became aware of that, I was reading Mystic River. John was very, very gracious by wearing a pixie hat in honor of me being from Boston. And Mystic River was set in Boston and written by Dennis Lehane. And it was that scene where the dad is going down, he sees all these police officers surrounding a park, and his older daughter is missing, and just go through his head, like, what's going on down there? Where could that be my daughter? Oh my goodness, it's my daughter. And I, even thinking back, I'm just getting chills on my spine.
Yeah, yeah. And when you put that in, because that was turned into a movie also, you know, but in the book, you get to experience really firsthand what that father is feeling and thinking in his head. Whereas in the movie, the actor has to just show it through their gestures, their face, you know, so it becomes more like that graphic novel kind of thing. So one of the real powers of, I know I'm here talking about my graphic novel, but this is also why I think it's very powerful to also read fiction, where you get that kind of narration and get to know what someone else is thinking.
So let's talk about, as a former teacher, and you were teaching fourth and fifth grade, I think it was?
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
That's, you know, when kids are kind of becoming aware that I'm going to be an adult someday. Can you address a couple of things? First, how important is it for us to still continue to read or co-read with our kids and talk to them about it? And how might we be able to take anything that we're reading and talk to our kids about imagining what it is this character is thinking or experience that?
That's great, because I did. Yeah, that was one of the things I loved when I was in the classroom, was the reading. I would make time every day, normally around lunchtime, where I'd have a read aloud book, you know, a book that we would do, and I would, you know, make my way through it. And it was always my favorite time of day to get to do that. And then when I became a parent, having that time of reading with my daughter, often at bedtime. But you're right. Once they start to get to a certain age, especially, you know, I think fourth and fifth, I was still kind of reading around bedtime with my daughter. But I think as she headed into middle school, that period was kind of over. But we still shared books in different ways. It was less of that nighttime reading, and it became actually a little bit more of listening to audiobooks together when we were in the car. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, just if I knew that she was reading a book, I would read the book also on my own. And so it would be less of that talking about the book in the moment. You know, a lot of times when if I'm reading a book, was reading a book to my daughter or even a reading book to my kids, I might not stop the story when I'm reading it to discuss things, because I just want the flow of it. I want them to be immersed in the story, or my daughter to be immersed in it when we're reading at bedtime, or even listening to the audiobook in the car. But then it would be later finding those opportunities of just saying, you know, like, gosh, I was thinking about that scene that we just read last night or we just listened to in the car. And what do you think was going, why do you think that character was doing, you know, and just kind of asking these very open-ended questions. They're not questions to quiz her, to, you know, to try to make sure that she's comprehending the story. They were more just, you know, opportunities to kind of discuss, you know, what's going on with these people, you know, a chance to empathize with their situation, or to think about what are they probably going to do next? Or what would you do in that situation? You know, like, I know if it was me, I'd be terrified in this moment. And she was so brave the way she handled that, you know, so, it made for nice discussions. And I think that those, that can be important, because those discussions can lead to conversations about other aspects, you know, like the, you know, I, you know, this kid had this happening in the story, but I've noticed that there's someone at school that often acts like that character too. And, yeah, well, maybe that's, you know, maybe that's why they behave in a certain way, you know, so it can generate some really interesting and helpful discussions. And it's just fun. It's fun, you know, fun for all of us.
Well, it is. I, one of the things that I loved, especially with my daughter, because she was a little bit more, both of my kids very thoughtful, but my daughter was more to share those deep thoughts that she had. And it was wonderful when she was fourth and fifth and sixth grade to see the maturity of her thinking and just see, like, whoa, she's not my little baby anymore. She's turning into a young woman.
Yeah. And that's true. That is part of that child development kind of piece of it all is. Yeah. And that's why I loved teaching fourth and fifth grade, because it felt like that golden age of childhood, but in part, you know, just the way that they're starting to see the broader world. They're starting to get interested in social issues and, you know, issues of social justice, you know, or just fairness, and so many, yeah, history opens up in a way that hadn't before. So it's a fun age.
Yeah. You know, one of the other things I kind of learned through hosting Reading with Your Kids is the idea that in schools, kids learn to read from kindergarten, or I guess now pre-K through second grade. And then in third grade, they have to read to learn. And there are a lot of kids, you know, get to third grade and they're not proficient. If you probably heard that I've did educational magic shows for a long time. If I were to give teacher John my magic Bic pen wand here, what would you do to kind of even that out? You know, because there are so many so kids who are read to come to school hearing over 800,000 more words than their peers who aren't read to, you know, and they get to second grade and they're already reading independently, and a lot of kids are struggling. How might you even things out for those kids who are struggling?
Yeah, it's, you know, because every kid does, I mean, they come into school as when they begin learning to read, they're coming from different places developmentally and in how much support that they've gotten. You know, and some kids just naturally struggle a bit more. But one of the things that felt most helpful in trying to get to help kids with reading was finding the right book to get into their hands. You know, all too often I would hear, you know, kids that I was teaching or parents say that their kid they just didn't like reading. And I knew from experience, from what I'd seen, that it's like, well, they don't like reading yet, because we have to find the right book for them. And because so many kids become readers, you know, where it's something that they enjoy and they gravitate towards doing once they find the book that really grabs them. And it doesn't need to be some literary masterpiece. It could be just something. It could be Captain Underpants. It could be, you know, Diary of a Wimpy Kid. There's so many these great books out there that are important for young readers because they enjoy them. When something, and I see this in the creative writing world too, is because I work a lot with, I mean, I teach creative writing to adults, but mm-hmm. I teach a lot of kids and teens as well. And I've noticed that how many kids who were not very proficient as writers or not very comfortable with writers or view themselves as not very strong in writing, once they were encouraged just to do creative writing, to imaginative writing, just to write for fun, where let's make up some fun ideas for a story. Let's start to put it down on the paper. We're not going to revise it. We're not going to worry about spelling. We're not going to get hung up on any of that kind of stuff. We're just going to get these ideas out of your head and start to put them down on paper. And once they were able to discover just the joy and the fun of that, then they want to do it. And by working, you know, having those fun books to read, you build fluency, and then you're going to be better able to tackle, you know, books that maybe aren't quite as fun because you just had more practice as a reader. And the same is true for writing as well. Is giving kids, you know, play is the way kids learn. And so the more that reading and even writing can feel like play, the more I think they're going to practice it.
Yeah. I had an experience back in 2019. I was at the Chicago Toy and Game Fair, and a family came along, and it was there was a 11, 12-year-old, and then some much younger kids, and they were looking at the books that were on my table. And I said to the 11-year-old, I said, "What kind of books do you like to read?" And she said, I don't like to read. And I go, "Yeah, maybe." And I picked up, it was a picture book, but it was a book about a tyrannic crankosaurus, a cranky turtle. And I said, "Just check this out and read this book to your little brother." And she was laughing and having fun. And yeah. I'm like, "Yeah, that book is yours."
Yeah, take it. Take it. Yeah. And that's what's important. We have to just, you know, as adults who are involved in the lives of young readers, I think it's important for us to never just say, well, they're not going to be a reader. This kid is just kind of, they're not a reader. They have other things that they enjoy, but it's not going to be reading. And I think it's just important to not believe that or accept that and keep trying to find that right book, that is going to captivate their imagination.
Well, the thing that's exciting now is that there are so many kids that had been labeled reluctant readers are turning into passionate readers thanks to middle grade graphic novels.
No kidding. Yeah.
Rodeo Hawkins and the Daughters of Mayhem.
That's right. I know. You know, when you and I were younger, there was that time when people really, parents and adults and educators and librarians really kind of frowned on comics as something that, oh, that's not, you know, that's just garbage. I don't want my kids reading that. I want them reading real books. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, there's been people have really seen how important graphic novels can be in supplementing, you know, as balancing it out, what the kids are reading, having graphic novels as well as traditional novels to read. So, yeah, I love it's been as someone who's been a fan of graphic novels, in particular graphic novels for kids for so many years, it's been just so rewarding to actually get to do one myself, and can't wait for kids to get their hands on it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was one of those dads while I supported my son reading graphic novels and got him that and anime and manga and all that. I would every once in a while when he was in high school go into his room and go, "Dude, can you please pick up a book that doesn't have just one this week?" And I didn't realize that he was engaged in reading real. It was real reading.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah.
Hey, John, one last thing. You know, you were talking about doing writing and just getting the ideas out of your head and just having fun with that. I have a feeling that Rodeo Hawkins and the Daughters of Mayhem, just that title, was just in your head going, "I got to get out of here."
Yeah, yes. You know, what's weird is that this is the only time this has ever happened to me, but this whole idea started with the title before I knew who the characters were, before I knew what I wanted the story to be. It actually began, I was working on another novel at the time, and my daughter was maybe first grade, and she was, her teacher had said, pick a vocabulary word and dress up like it. And my daughter picked the vocabulary word catastrophe, and she wrapped herself in bandages, had a sling on her arm, crutch, you know, she looked really cute. And, you know, as a parent does, I put it up on Facebook and show off how cute she was. And But then some friend of mine just said, ooh, she looks like a daughter of mayhem. I had no idea what she meant, but it was like something about that turn of phrase, daughter of mayhem, just activated my imagination. I just had to stop that other novel. I was like, I have got to figure this out now, you know, and it was just was so gripping that it went from there, was figuring out what's the story to fit this title.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. John, we should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Rodeo Hawkins and the Daughters of Mayhem and find out more about you.
Yes. I mean, a good first stop is my website, johnclaudebemis.com, where I have tons of information there, how to get the book, more about the book, and when I'll be visiting bookstores and festivals. And of course, if you want to follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and I have a couple videos on YouTube that are all linked off of my website.
Awesome. We've had a great time speaking to the author of Rodeo Hawkins and the Daughters of Mayhem. It's a brand new middle grade graphic novel from our guest, John Claude Bemis. Hey, John, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids, and thanks for the pixie hat.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. Great talking to you. So this is a lot of fun.
Hey, my friends, you know one of my favorite parts of the day is story time. There's just something magical about snuggling up with your kids, opening a great book, and escaping into an adventure together. And let me tell you, that moment becomes even more magical when you're curled up in the softest, coziest bedding you've ever felt. That's why I'm so excited that CozyEarth.com is supporting Reading with Your Kids. Their bamboo sheets, comforters, and pajamas are unbelievably soft, naturally breathable, and temperature regulating, which means no more sweaty nights or chilly toes. Right now, Cozy Earth is offering Reading with Your Kids listeners an unbelievable and exclusive 41% off their entire site. That's right, you heard me right, 41% off. So go ahead, create your own cozy reading nook, wrap yourself and your kids up in something comfy, grab your favorite bedtime book, and turn story time into the best part of your day. Head on over to CozyEarth.com and use the promo code READ at checkout to save 41%. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code READ. Join us right now from Brooklyn in New York City. Our guest is here today to celebrate her new middle grade novel. It's called Bubblegum Shoe, The Case of the Contraband Closet. Please welcome to the show Goldie Modavsky. Goldie, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
I love the title of your book. Tell us tell us a little bit about the title first off.
This is the book. It's called Bubblegum Shoes, The Case of the Contraband Closet. It's a little hard for middle grade readers to understand because they're not too familiar with the word gumshoe, I have discovered. Can't blame them. It's kind of an old-timey word. But, you know, gumshoe is another term for detective. Mm-hmm. And we just decided to go with bubble gumshoes to make it kind of a cute sort of, you know, combination of those words. It's kind of a take on like a noir detective mystery. And then you add like the color and the fun and the sugariness of bubblegum to it. And our main character loves to chew gum. So it just felt like the perfect title.
I love it. Tell us about the characters we're going to meet. We're going to meet four girls. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So the main character is named Maya Mendoza, and she is a 12-year-old sixth grader. She is a bit of a misfit. She doesn't really have any friends, and the reason for that is because she loves to stick her nose where it doesn't belong. She considers herself a bit of an amateur detective, though she has the confidence of, of like a real hard-boiled detective, and people just think that she likes to butt into their business. But the story begins when the contraband closet in their middle school, which is the closet where all of their forbidden items that they're not supposed to bring to school get confiscated. So that closet winds up empty, and Maya has the misfortune of being the one standing in front of it when that discovery happens. She gets sent to detention, where she sees three other misfit girls. One of them is a new girl from the Tonier town of Montclair, New Jersey. They all live in New Jersey, but the new girl, Clementine, is from the fancy part of New Jersey, and she's totally misplaced here and out of her element. And then there is Ava, who's about 2 years younger than everyone else because she is a brainiac and she skipped 2 years. And so she doesn't really have too many friends either because of that. And then there is Jordan, which is Maya's former best friend. And they're kind of in a bit of a fight that we discover as we read along. All of them are misfits. None of them have anything to do with one another, really. But they all discover they had something in that contraband closet, and they are desperate to get it back. So they team up together to try to solve this mystery before all of them get blamed for causing it, and they try to retrieve all those stolen items. That's what the story is about.
It sounds like a fun story. Tell me, is this set? You mentioned Montclair, which I know is nicer part of New Jersey. Is this set in a real city in New Jersey?
It is. Yeah, I set it in Hillside, New Jersey. I spend a lot of time there because actually my sister lives over there, and it's just a nice little town that I really love. And I thought, yeah, these girls sound like they belong in this suburban northern New Jersey town. So I thought it was the perfect place. It's near enough to New York City, but far enough away that they never go there, you know. So yeah, I thought it was the perfect place to set it.
Cool. I traveled around the country doing educational magic shows for 40 years and did tons of work in northern Jersey, actually all throughout New Jersey. And boy, New Jersey gets such a bad rap. Everybody talks trash about New Jersey, and it's a great place.
You know what? I'm guilty of it too. That's kind of the attitude you have coming from New York. But like, movies have done it for so long too, and I don't get why. You know, it's actually a really, really nice place to live. It's a really great place. I like it a lot.
Yeah, and it's you're in the suburbs of two great cities, New York and Philadelphia, depending
That's
on
true.
Where in the state you are.
Yes, you're close to everything.
And you have the Pine Barrens.
You've got the shore. I go to the shore every summer. It's a great place. You've got a little bit of everything.
And then you got the girls from Bubblegum Shoe.
That's right. Yeah, you'll find every type of person in New Jersey.
Tommy, was this inspired by what you might have gone through in middle school?
No, not at all. This was mostly inspired by those old black and white noir movies. I just thought it would be funny if we took a character like Humphrey Bogart, you know, his detective Marlowe, and if we just put him in a middle grade setting and turned him into a 12-year-old girl, but take his whole attitude and his determination to solve crimes, and I thought it would just be funny if we made him a 12-year-old girl. So that's really where the whole idea came from, and everything else snowballed after that. But no, I did not have this kind of experience. I'm very different. I'm a very different person from what Maya ended up being. But yeah, it's nice to write someone who is nothing like you at all. You know, you get to lay it all out instead of live it. You know, she runs after trouble. She she sticks her nose where it doesn't belong, as I mentioned. I was a very shy child. I was determined to stay out of trouble my entire life. So it's nice to live out those sorts of demons on the page.
It sounds like you have, if not in real life, you have a kind of a mischievous streak in you.
In my books. Only in my books. No. In real life, I'm very by the book, to use another book term.
It sounds like this is something that a lot of kids can relate to, because even if they're not sticking their nose into other people's business, I think there are a lot of sixth graders out there who just don't feel like they fit in.
Absolutely. That was a big theme in the book. And the heart of the story is really about Maya and finding those connections that are so lacking in her life. You know, she acts like more of a grown-up than a kid sometimes, but she's not connecting with the grown-ups in her life or with the kids around her. And just making the story about yes, she's solving a crime, but at the same time, she has to be able to rely on other people. You know, she has to, because she's used to doing it all on her own. Mm-hmm. But finding those friendships and forging those bonds was really what was at the heart of the story. And yeah, like you said, a lot of kids feel left out. And it's not, you know, necessarily because, yeah, they could feel different. You know, Maya, that's really what's going on with Maya, is that she just feels so different than everybody. It's not that she feels down about herself. Mm-hmm. You know, she's super confident to a fault. And that's kind of also getting in the way of her finding friendships. But this is a character who really likes herself and is really good at seeing details, but is not so good at the social situation that other kids might come to more easily.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think with the dawning of technology that's supposed to help us, well, and does help us connect, you and I are, you know, a couple hundred miles apart from each other, and we're looking into each other's space. But it seems like a lot of technology is preventing kids from really developing those friendships that, you know, I made because my mom threw me out in the morning, told me not to come home until the streetlights came on. And so I had to go out and make friends. Kids these days, looks like they're spending so much time on their screens that they're not able to play the same way I was, or maybe you were too.
Absolutely. I think it's a big problem. Do I have the answers for how to solve it? Not necessarily. But I'm just happy that kids are still reading and their adults are doing the work of putting books in kids' hands. Mm-hmm. You know, I know so many stories of kids who don't have phones, or like the parents don't let them have phones. And that in and of itself is a deterrent in making friends. I've heard multiple stories where kids come home and they're like, I can't talk to my friends about this game on their phone because all of them are playing it and I feel left out. So it's a really tricky balancing act. I think every adult has to handle it in their own way. But yeah, one of the things I love about the story is that, you know, they've got to get their boots on the ground to solve this case. You know, they have a list of suspects. They have to do the grind work of going out and talking to people and in order to solve the situation. So I hope kids can see that and, you know, sort of reflect on on getting out there and, you know, talking to people in real life. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of those old school detective movies and novels?
Yeah, yeah. More the movies than the novels, absolutely. But I think you can find mystery in a lot of different genres, which is something that I really like about it. I'm a big fan of horror movies, and I consider slasher movies to be some great mysteries, you know? And I take a lot of cues from that sort of thing, too, even though you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell because this is a middle grade novel. But a lot of times when I was thinking, how do I get this red herring in the story? You know, what's a good way to do that? I would fall back on my favorite horror movies and see how they did it there and sort of try to translate that into a middle grade sort of comedy mystery setting.
Are there any movies in particular we can maybe try to identify as we're reading this book along with our kids?
No, probably not. There are some fun little Easter eggs for noir film aficionados. The school principal is named Principal Spade after one of the Humphrey Bogart characters. I tried to give all the teachers names of classic movie stars from that time frame. Just, I don't know if anybody will ever pick up on that, but now you know.
All right. That's very, very cool. That was being an author of kids' books, of middle grade novels, was that something that you always aspired to do?
You know, not necessarily. I always just wanted to stick with young adult. Mm-hmm. That's what I started with. But even with my first book, Kill the Boy Band, I think one of the first comments I heard about it from a fellow author was like, did you ever try doing middle grade? You'd have a great voice for it. And I'd never really considered it. I always found writing for middle grade audiences to be really daunting. I think it's just a totally different skill set that I really had to learn and hone. And it really took me a long time and a lot of personal convincing to be able to tackle it. I didn't really think I'd be able to do it. You know, I tried a few times before and I had to read a lot more middle grade books. I hadn't done that since I was a kid. And most of those books were kind of like assignment books. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the most voracious reader when I was a child. But yeah, I read so many different books and I thought it's probably easier to, well, maybe not. I don't know. I thought if I'm ever going to kind of hop from one age group to another, I should try going a little younger first before trying the adult route. A lot of YA authors, you know, go off and write their adult books. But I thought, why not try middle grade? I mean, with YA, I've written a few comedies, and uh-huh. I found that YA audiences are not necessarily receptive to comedies. You know, a lot of them like fantasy and romance and thriller and horror. But then when I was writing my middle grade, I found that I could flex that comedy muscle that I love to work with so much that I felt a little stifled in young adult. So uh-huh. that was a really nice aspect of getting to write middle grade is writing for an audience that I thought could be really receptive to a few comedy curveballs thrown in there.
That's awesome. Yeah, there's nothing quite like comedy to help a kid, especially in that middle grade age, to just kind of open up and allow themselves to be kids again. I remember I had an experience in beautiful Camden, New Jersey, where I was hired by the school district to come in and perform at all the elementary and middle schools. And there was this one school in particular. I guess it had a reputation of being especially a difficult school. And the principal walked in. All the kids were being escorted in, a security guard in the front of the line, security guard in the back of the line. So it was taking a long time to come in. Mm. I'm saying hi to the kids, and the principal comes in and tells me to stop talking, yells at the kids to stop talking. Mm. He introduced me he said, I don't know who booked this guy, but he's here, and it's going to be 45 minutes to sit down and be quiet. And
That's the introduction.
I'm telling you, I was steaming, and I just said, I'm going to go out there and I am going to kill this audience. And I did. But the kids, of these kids who, in the eyes of the principal, with these hard inner city kids who are difficult and behavior problems and needed to be escorted everywhere. And then suddenly I came out and got them laughing, and they turned into kids again. And yeah, he was able to see them, and he actually, to his credit, got up and apologized to me from the stage.
Oh,
gave
wow.
a big hug and shook my hand, and I'm like, okay, you're kind of cool. I'm not gonna curse you when I go home tonight.
That's great.
Yeah. Tell me, you know, we always encourage families to read together, and middle grade novels, I don't envision a lot of families snuggling up on the couch and reading a middle grade novel together, although I do know some do. Mm. But I think this would be a great book for a family to co-read and then come and chat about the book either over dinner or on the way to soccer or ballet. What kind of conversations do you think families can have as they're learning about these four amazing young people?
Yeah, I love that. I hope there is a lot of co-reading. I know there are so many books that I have two little kids. I can't wait until I can start reading them these kind of full-length books. I remember a fifth grade teacher of mine would always read a few pages from a book at the start of the day. So yeah, something like that sounds really delightful. Just on a mystery scale, I think it would be really fun for a family who co-reads to try to figure out who done it, you know, and there's so many different rabbit holes that the main character goes down to find out who the culprit is. And it would just be interesting to put, you know, your clues together. The reader is trying to solve the mystery at the same time that the main character and all her friends are trying to solve it. So it's always interesting to see how far ahead the reader is than the main character, or if the reader needs to catch up to the main character. So just going through the suspect list and trying to see who done it could be a fun conversation sort of
yeah.
starter. And some of the themes in there that I think are so relatable to kids, you know, the themes about friendship and authority, actually. You know, Maya has a bit of a problem with authority, so I think it would be a really good question about, you know, whether she's right, whether it's right for her to question all authority figures, or maybe whether she should fall in line and believe that they have her best interest in mind, you know. Mm-hmm. I try to give all my characters the most agency that I can, but when we're talking about children as characters, right, you know, you have to question, like Maya does, whether, you know, the adults in her life have her best interest in mind, especially when it comes to her principal, who I think is probably the biggest foil that she has in the story. So That should be a fun conversation.
I love that conversation. I loved encouraging my kids to question authority. And boy, I taught them really well. especially mine.
You know, I'm not saying to just fully question authority. There are definitely adult characters in the book that are compassionate and loving. And it's just about Maya making those discoveries for herself, you know, about who to trust, who to open up to. Mm-hmm. I think those are good questions to have.
Yeah. I still love reading mysteries and detective novels that are written for old guys like me. and it is fun when you're sitting there and you're trying to follow the story and it's like, oh, okay, I know who it is right now. And then all of a sudden there's this curveball comes from out of nowhere. And I'm imagining if I was, reading Bubblegum Shoes with my kids, that would be fun just to like, oh, it's not that person. Why? So who it is now? I just think it would be a blast.
Yeah, it's fun to insert as many plot twists and reveals as I can in the story. Definitely, I think my objective is to take readers through many different routes and kind of surprise them as much as I can along the way. I want the end of every chapter to feel like a cliffhanger, basically. I just want to keep surprising them at every turn, so hopefully I was able to do that with this one.
Now, as you're writing, are you sitting there writing like, oh, this is going to get the kids thinking it's so-and-so. And it's so much fun when they throw that curveball in there.
No, not necessarily. I'm hoping it all works. You know, that's the biggest question. You know, like I'm hoping they're following along with me. You know, I hope I'm not losing them too much because it's a really tricky balance of trying to throw a reader off, but also keeping them really engaged. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want them to get to a point where things get like too confusing or too unsolvable and they decide to close the book. I'm always thinking of, is this the point of the book where they decide to close it and never open it again? So I'm always trying to avoid that sort of situation. I'm never trying to trick anybody, you know. I just want them all to have a good time, even when I'm throwing red herrings in there. It's not to sort of toy with them. It's more to build the mystery and to get them even more engaged than they might otherwise have been.
Awesome. We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Bubblegum Shoes, The Case of the Contraband Closet, and find out more about you.
Sure. Yeah. You can find it at the Penguin Random House website. And I guess on their website and your local bookstore, I would hope. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Goldie Writes. And my website is GoldieMoldavsky.com.
We've had a great time speaking to the author of Bubblegum Shoes, The Case of the Contraband Closet. Our guest has been Goldie Moldavsky. Hey, Goldie, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a great time.
Wow, talk about fun. I hope you had as much fun listening to the show as I had creating it. And if you did have fun, or if this episode gave you something to think about or made you laugh or smile, please consider sharing a link to the show with somebody that you love. I would be so very grateful if you would also share the link on your socials, maybe leave a 5-star review, and of course, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the show. Let's give big shout-outs to the people who made this episode so wonderful, starting with our guest, Goldie Moldavsky. Please be sure to check out her middle grade novel, Bubblegum Shoes, The Case of the Contraband Closet. and, of course, Jean-Claude Bemis. Please be sure to check out his middle grade graphic novel, Rodeo Hawkins and the Daughters of Mayhem. And, of course, we're so very grateful to our sponsors. You know, real magic happens when you support our sponsors and use our promo code. You get a great deal, and we may earn a small commission. And that helps keep the light on here, and it also helps keep us spreading the joy of reading together to everyone in the world. My team, they deserve a big thank you. Fatima Khan, Chris Doherty, El Glassman, Dante Greco. And, of course, I absolutely want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support and the love that she gives me. She is the apple of my eye. And most of all, we want to thank you. You are amazing. And you're making the world a kinder, more empathetic, more loving space every time you read with your kids. Until next time, go make some reading magic happen. We'll be right back.